This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Hey everyone, welcome to the TriDot Podcast. We're talking all about cadence today with two TriDot coaches teaching us everything we need to know about the rate at which our limbs spin their way through the swim, bike, and run. The first coach here to guide us in this conversation about cadence is Coach Jose Ramon Callen. Coach Jose is the founder and lead coach at Josera Training based out of Huesca, Spain. He's an Ironman certified coach and has a university degree in sports science. Jose serves as TriDot's market leader in the country of Spain, spreading the word about TriDot and bringing new coaches and athletes to the TriDot family. He himself is a 28-time Ironman finisher who is equally passionate about seeing his own athletes cross the finish line. Jose, a big welcome to your first appearance with us here on the TriDot Podcast.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you very much for having me. It is a pleasure to be part of your show and do it with you and with the one and only Jeff Wren. So I feel very, very, very happy. And before we start, I want to take advantage of this moment to say you congratulations on your job, because I think it's offering every week high quality content, and that helps our triathlon community of athletes and coaches. So thank you very much. Congratulations. And today for me is a dream come true.
Also with us, as Jose alluded to, is Coach Jeff Rains. Jeff is a USAT triathlon level 2 and Ironman U certified coach and a TriDot master coach who has a master of science in exercise physiology and was a D1 collegiate runner. He has over 60 Ironman event finishes to his credit and has coached hundreds of athletes to the Ironman finish line. Jeff has been training and coaching with TriDot since 2015. Hey there, Jeff.
Hey, Andrew. Excited to record today with Josera from Spain. I've actually had the pleasure of meeting him in person when he came to the...
All right. Yeah, great.
Yeah, he came to the States to our Houston TriDot Pool School, and I was actually his lane instructor, and we were able to hang out a lot that weekend.
Yes.
I'll also be seeing him again in person in Nice, France, coming up here very, very soon. So I can't wait to see you again in person, Jose.
Thank you very much. Likewise. Thank you very much.
Well, I am Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation about cadence, and then wind things down on our cooldown with Vanessa interviewing a TriDot coach. We've had sports scientist Andy Blow from Precision Fuel and Hydration on the show quite a few times to help you nail your hydration and fueling strategy for training and racing. We've learned from Andy that you'll need to replace a portion of your carb, electrolyte, and fluid losses with what you eat and drink if you want to perform at your best. So Andy and the team at Precision Fuel and Hydration have developed a fuel planner so that you can take the guesswork out of your race nutrition plan. Head over to precisionfuelandhydration.com to take the fuel planner and get your free personalized race nutrition strategy. From there, you can book a call with PFNH's athlete support team to refine your strategy. And don't forget that TriDot listeners can get 10% off their first order of electrolytes and fueling products by using the code TRI23 at the checkout at precisionfuelandhydration.com.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
For our warm-up question today, I have a triathlon would you rather question. These are always fun. Let's see what you gentlemen think of here. Would you rather race your next A race, which I believe for both of you guys is Nice, France. Would you rather race that A race swimming in a wetsuit you've never used before, riding a bike you've never ridden before, running in shoes you've never worn before, or fueling with nutrition that you've never tried before? And Coach Jose, it is your first time on the show today. What is your answer to this would you rather?
To solve this question, I always wonder what's first, internal factors or external factors? So what's first, physiology or gear? I think during an Ironman 70.3, all kinds of races, we have many things that we can control, but we have many things that we cannot control. At least talking about physiology, something that is key to swim, bike, and run, nutrition is the closest part of the physiology to keep advancing, to have energy, to have liquids, to have salt intake. So I would prefer always to be 100% sure that my nutrition is my nutrition, this one that I've been testing every single day during the specific part of the season. And okay, gear always is gear. You can adapt. Maybe you will reduce your speed. Maybe you will have different feelings. But for sure, nutrition for me is the number one.
Okay, so that's the one that you would definitely want to have your own. So between a new wetsuit, new running shoes, or a new bike, which one of those three would you rather have be brand new on race day?
Brand new, I'd prefer maybe the bike. Yeah.
Yeah. That actually, Jose, that's my answer here. Because, I mean, how often do you get the chance to ride a different bike? There's some really cool bikes out there, and I love my Diamond Marquee and my Diamond Radiant Road bike. But if you have the chance to jump on a different bike just to see, you know, every single bike kind of has a different personality, right? A different feel. And just to kind of get to know a different brand and a different bike is always kind of fun. And you don't normally get that opportunity unless you pay money to rent it. So my answer here is the bike. If I have to do something new on race day between these options, I would rather be riding a different bike. I mean, just as long as I can get the fit close to my fit, I feel like it would go relatively okay, maybe, probably. I'm not a great swimmer, so I'd rather have my own wetsuit. I'm picky about run shoes, so I'd rather be in my own run shoes. I agree with Jose's logic on the nutrition. I want my UCAN. I want my precision fuel and hydration. So I'm going with you on the bike here. Coach Jeff Raines, are you agreeing with us, or would you rather have a different input be new on race day?
I am completely different than you guys, and I cannot believe your answer is not my answer, and this is why. My official answer is the wetsuit, because a bike, like if my A race was a full distance Ironman, and I've never ridden that bike before, that's a long time to potentially be uncomfortable. Kind of same thing with the run. If I haven't worn those shoes before, I might get a blister. So my answer is the wetsuit. I would rather do an Ironman in a wetsuit I've never worn before, because if it's a little off, arguably, right, that shortest point of, well, not arguably, it's an actual, the shortest portion of any distance triathlon is the swim portion. So if I'm uncomfortable, I get it out of the way early, a short, sweet swim, and then I get all my good gear and stuff for the rest of the day.
Make sure you're a part of the I Am Trotted Facebook group. I'm going to pose this question today, the Monday this episode is going out, and we're going to ask our community, would you rather do your next A race with a bike you've never ridden before, shoes you've never run in before, a wetsuit you've never swam in before, or nutrition you've never eaten, drinking before? Can't wait to see what you, our community, has to say.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
We are thrilled to have Sailfish as the swim partner of Trotout Training. Sailfish was founded in 2007 by Jan Sibbersen, who was on the national German team and is the fastest swimmer to ever hit the waters of Ironman. The Sailfish mission is to create premium triathlon and open water swim products. They offer swim skins, tri-suits, and swim accessories. But the core of this Sailfish product line are their award-winning wetsuits. Known for their outstanding flexibility, balanced buoyancy, and distinguished gliding properties in the water, Sailfish wetsuits are truly made to make you faster. And that certainly has been the case for me. I've swam in many different brands of wetsuits over the years, and my Sailfish is the very first one that I put on, got into the water, and clocked swim splits I had no business hitting on my own. For me, it was truly love at first stroke. With several models and price points, there for sure will be a Sailfish wetsuit that is right for you. Head to sailfish.com to check out all the neoprene goodness and use SFC-TRIDOT20 at checkout for 20% off your new wetsuit. Whether we are swimming, biking, or running, our legs and arms spin around at a certain rate to help us move forward. The rate at which they spin is referred to as our cadence. On your Garmin workout report, it may manifest as stroke rate, RPMs, or steps per minute, depending on the sport. But don't be fooled. All of those terms are just different forms of measuring your cadence across all three disciplines. And here to teach us everything triathletes need to know about cadence is Coach Jose and Coach Jeff. Now, Jose, it is your first time with us on the show, so let's open the main set today with just a little get-to-know Coach Jose. Tell us just briefly how you got into the sport of triathlon in the first place, and give us kind of some of the highlights from your triathlon career.
Yes, it was back in 1994. It was one day I was walking in the streets of my little town here in the north of Spain, in Huesca, close to the Pyrenees, the peak mountains of the country, close to France. So I was walking and I met one of my teachers at high school, and he told me, okay, but you are always swimming, biking, running. You are always doing some kind of activity. You are so active. And why don't you try the triathlon? And I said, like, okay, what's triathlon? Because, 1994, it was like unknown. Nobody was doing triathlons. So I started some kind of meetings with two guys that they were starting the triathlon team here in Huesca. And 1 year later, 1995, I did my very first triathlon, Olympic distance triathlon in San Sebastian in the north of Spain. And it was very nice because this same year, Mark Allen won the sixth Ironman World Championship of his career.
And yes, he did. Yeah.
I discovered Ironman Hawaii, Kona, Mark Allen, all these kind of big names. And it was like, okay, I would like to do an Ironman someday. At this moment, I was studying at university. So for me, the first thing was to study, to be the best student possible. And so my focus was on the degree. And at this moment, I had time enough to prepare for sprint and Olympic distance triathlon. So I did all these years, the Olympic and sprint triathlons. And once I finished 2002, I said, okay, it's my time. I will do my first Ironman. I did Ironman Lanzarote here in Spain, one of the most beautiful races in the world. And it was amazing, Andrew. It was really beautiful because all the process to prepare the Ironman, all the, the feelings, all the knowledge, of course, because back in 2002, everything was new. We didn't have triathlon coaches. We didn't have almost a specific triathlon bikes. It was everything new. Nutrition was new for us. So it was a nice discovery, and race day was the perfection. So I enjoyed a lot race day, and 1 meter after the finish line, I promised myself, okay, from this moment on, I will do at least one Ironman every year. And so far, I've finished from this moment, 28 Ironmans all around the world, including Kona, including Ironman World Championships St. George. And the most beautiful thing is that now I'm training for the 28th. It will be in Ironman, California next October. I'm very excited because I will meet there many of the triathlon team and the triathlon triathletes. So it will be a very nice moment, and which is very, very, very nice. And I feel so proud. Is that every single day that I wake up, and this is every single day, I go to do my training, my triathlon training, and it's like, okay, I'm happy, I'm doing what I love to do, and it doesn't matter if I do one Ironman, two Ironman, three Ironman, or 28 Ironman, I love this lifestyle. So I think this is the best way to keep training, to keep enjoying this lifestyle, and of course, to share this lifestyle with my athletes, because at the end, for me, it's very nice to help other athletes to feel and to live and to have the same passion and this same big day when they are racing Ironman or Ironman 70.3.
All right. Well, it's been great to get to know Jose, and you know, we will certainly have you on the podcast again because you are a very knowledgeable and qualified coach. But just wanted to give our reoccurring audience a chance to get to know you a little bit before we talk about cadence. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about our legs and our arms and the way that they move. Starting in the water, our cadence in the water is typically referred to as our stroke rate. Jeff, Jose, what is stroke rate and what are we looking for in that number? Coach Jeff Rains, we'll start with you on this one. What is a good stroke rate? I mean, folks, they finish their swim workout, they pull up their Garmin information, they see their stroke rate, and they're like, is this good? I don't know. Talk to us about it.
There's a couple layers to that. I mean, I'll start very basic. Stroke rate is the number of strokes you take total per minute, counting each arm cycle. So right and left, each taking a stroke would be two strokes. Most wearables these days and maybe multi-sport watches will measure and show a stroke rate per minute average. So I think that's the number you're referring to there, Andrew. And really what you're looking for is efficiency first and finding that perfect balance of effort and speed. So SWOLF is a number that you might see on some of those Garmin devices. It's a swim specific kind of a score metric that Garmin devices will show you. It's related to golf, right? But it's to help you see the value of your stroke rate as it relates to distance per stroke versus the stroke rate and getting the most out of each stroke. So kind of like in golf, the lower the score, the better. And so the lower that SWOLF score, it would show that one travels, far per stroke. And that can be compared and coinciding to speed and pace per 100. And so lower stroke rates are not always the goal. But for a beginner swimmer, I think lower stroke rates can show you how efficient you are in the water. You're getting a lot of distance per stroke. That's why lane lines in the pool are multicolored. It's for a coach to see, are you getting more distance per stroke, maybe on one side than the other side, things like that. But anyways, low swim stroke rates may show that one is more efficient in the water. But once kind of that body balancing is mastered, there is a point where increasing your stroke rate can and will make one swim faster. But there can be a cost, so you got to be careful. If higher stroke rates might be good, then is as high as possible better? No, not necessarily. And I will just say your last 30% or approximate your last 30% of the underwater stroke is called that finish phase of the stroke. And you want to get the majority of that finish phase. So you don't want to bail out early, right? And not take advantage of that portion of the stroke. Many increase their efforts and also their stroke rates, thinking that they'll increase their speed, and they just start spinning their arms faster, right? They give more effort, but they actually swim slower. This is because they're potentially bailing out early in that finish phase of the stroke and throwing water up to the sky and losing that propulsion that they have built in that middle diagonal phase or that propulsive phase. But anyways, water against water is speed in swimming, not water against air. So now to kind of answer your question, I find that for most, and arguably, right, 50 to 60 strokes per minute tends to be the fastest that most upper age groupers can maybe swing their arms for long course racing and still get the majority of that finish phase of the stroke effectively. And I have to throw this out there because this is the key and this is the real answer. The key is to get faster and more efficient at lower swim cadences, then slowly over time, work your way up and not rush the process. So just because you hear or read that slightly higher stroke rates, can make you swim faster, doesn't necessarily mean that is true for you in that moment of your swim career.
Perhaps the swim is the one area where there's other things going on to look at, right? Because there's the SWOLF score, there's this distance per stroke. I think there's less emphasis on having a particular cadence because there's a lot more to the picture. When you talk to your athletes, Jose, about their stroke rate and some of these other metrics, distance per stroke they're covering, what are you looking for in the data with your athletes?
First of all, I like to mention and to explain to my athletes the strokes per minute as the number of opportunities that they have to move forward. So this way, they focus on every single movement. So every single movement that you are doing when you are swimming is key. There are no movements that are not important. So before that, so before starting with the process to know exactly the number of strokes per minute, we need to talk about technique. And for this reason, since I went to Houston and I had the great opportunity to meet Jeff, to have the lessons from him, from Jeff Boer, I highly recommend Try the Pool School to every single triathlete, every single swimmer, because it doesn't matter the level of fitness that they have, they will improve, and most important, they will be more efficient. The technique will be better. So after this step, so first technique, first focus on your technique, and let's do the correct movements when you are in the water. I think something very, very nice to work is to find the exact tempo for every single swimmer. For this reason, I always work with my triathletes with the tempo trainer. Tempo trainer is a very, very small, very little device. So it's very easy to find. And it gives you the opportunity to constantly swim at the exact strokes per minute. Okay, so it's a very small device you put between your head and your swim cap, and then it starts signaling you the times that you are doing every movement, like beep, 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 beep. So you just need to focus on your technique, and at the same time repeat the number of beeps that you are listening. So with this in mind, we go to the pool, and then for different intensities, we start working, trying to find the best balance, as Jeff said, the best balance between this is my limit, my upper limit, and this is my lower limit, because we need to balance between the speed, the technique, and at the same time, the stroke rate. So I remember when I was working in the High Performance Athletic Center during the summer of the 2000 Olympic Games in Sydney. I was working in Barcelona with the laboratory of physiology. So it was very nice to see all the professional athletes, swimmers, triathletes.
I bet.
Athletes, everybody. And when we went to their pool to do some kind of assessments with them, it was very nice because the coach on deck had a decision to stop the number of repetitions that they did. And they stopped the number of repetitions that they did when they were swimming at race pace when the technique or the stroke rate was bad. So there is no way that this swimmer can improve his performance or her performance if he is not using the correct technique or is not swimming at the perfect stroke.
Yeah. Rate.
I like that because it doesn't reinforce bad habits. That's awesome.
For our athletes, you know, because inevitably they're going to go to the pool, they're going to think about their form, they're going to get out of the pool, they're going to look at the numbers and the data. If we just happen to see a stroke rate that's higher than what Jeff recommended 50 to 60 is what we should hopefully be seeing. If we see something higher than that, if we see something dramatically lower than that, are there implications for our swim form? Can we kind of learn in the numbers, oh, we might be doing X, Y, or Z in our swim form? What can we learn from the numbers we're seeing in our post-workout report?
Yes, we can learn a lot, of course, because, you know, numbers are perfect to be combined with the rest of the things in the training. Of course, feelings are very important because, you know, the athlete has this human side that we need to analyze every single day. So I think it's very important to have the numbers, to have the feelings. And with this balance, I think when you have the athlete and you ask this athlete, okay, how did you feel when you were, for example, 85 strokes per minute? Okay, depending on the reasoning, maybe we have one.
Probably felt
direction.
Tired. Yeah, I probably felt like I was working too hard.
Yes, because here the goal is to keep going and to move forward, not just during the swim portion. We need to take our bike and then to run. So we need, as Jeff said before, we need to be efficient. Everything about triathlon, about endurance, about long distance, is about efficiency. We need to be efficient. And in the water, it's very important to sustain the speed, to sustain the pace that we are swimming. If we are all the time like accelerating and decelerating, accelerating, decelerating, we have a big problem. The first problem is that when we are doing that, we are increasing the quantity of glycogen that we are burning, because we are all the time moving in a different pace. And when we increase the pace, then we lose this part of the glycogen. So if this athlete is doing this 85 strokes per minute, and he cannot sustain the entire length of the session, or maybe the race, there's no way that this is a good stroke rate for him. And the opposite is correct too. Mm. If he is swimming too low, a low cadence, low rate, and he is going too slow, there is no way that this athlete will have the best chance to have the best experience. It doesn't matter if he wants to qualify for Kona. It doesn't matter if he wants to finish the race, because at the end, we always want that the triathlete has the best experience and to achieve the goal. So with triathlon, we have more time as coaches to analyze the single data and to talk to the athlete and to explain and to have the education side, the human side. So this is beautiful because we save time creating schedules, and then we have time to create a communication with the athlete. So for this reason, we have more opportunities to analyze. You need 85, you need 80, you need 65, or maybe for this distance, you need 85, and for this distance, you need 67.
I also want to throw in that your swim cadences or stroke rates, they will be slightly higher in open water than in a pool, okay? But it shouldn't be much higher. In a pool, let's say a 25-yard pool, you might have 2 to 3 walls per minute, right? You glide into the wall, you flip turn, you turn around, all right? Then you push off, then you streamline off of that wall. That might be 2 to 4 seconds per wall that your average stroke rate is zero, and it brings down that actual overall average. So know that in a pool, the stroke rates might be slightly a little lower than actual, right? But in open water, your stroke rate should be about 5 to 8 strokes per minute. That's kind of like my rule. I'm doing air quotes here, like for my athletes. Your stroke rates in open water shouldn't be more than about 5 to 8 strokes per minute higher than in a pool, right? If your average stroke rate in open water is significantly higher than in a pool, then usually the buoyancy of the wetsuit and the neoprene is throwing off the timing aspect of your stroke, and you're kind of spinning out. Right. So that's why a lot of athletes get into open water and they get in their race day and they're pushing way, way hard. And they get home and they look at the data and they're like, I swam so much harder than I ever do. And my pace was lower than every single swim I do. Right. So that's why it's key to get into open water as much as possible. Get used to your wetsuit and how it affects your body balancing and your stroke rate. So that it doesn't ruin your race day.
Now, Coach Jose, you also, in your certifications, I didn't mention this at the top of the show, but you are a certified cycling coach. And so I'm going to have you transition us out onto the bike in our conversation on cadence. Now, our legs go round and round with a certain revolutions per minute or RPMs. So Coach Jose, what cadence are we looking for athletes to hit out on the bike?
So when we talk about cadence, always what we know is that we need to balance between the effort and the energy expenditure and the speed or the power that we are producing. So this is the first portion. The second one is we need to do that in a good position on the bike. So to visit your bike fitter is key to be in the perfect position. If you don't have the perfect position on your bike,
absolutely,
there is no way to maintain, to sustain a correct cadence. The third part will be to have the aerobic endurance to sustain this effort. Okay, so this is key, of course, and the mobility. When we are talking about endurance sports, we need to sustain the higher range of the options of this athlete. So what I mean is, if we are doing a training zone 2 and this athlete when it's sustaining, for example, 200 watts in zone two, if we see that the heart rate is constant, okay, this is a very good guidance for this athlete at this intensity. If we increase, for example, the cadence, and then the heart rate goes up while the power is the same, is when we are having the information that, okay, this is too much for this athlete. So when we are training...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I encourage my athletes to do some tests. When they are doing the zone two session, for example, 1 hour zone two session on the bike, especially when they are indoors, when they are training in the indoor trainer, they have the best opportunity. So first 10 minutes, you will sustain zone two, your power zone two, and then we will analyze your heart rate. It's constant. Okay. If you are pedaling, for example, 80 revolutions per minute. So let's do the next 10 minutes. Next 10 minutes, sustaining the power. Let's see the heart rate, which is your heart rate is constant. Okay. Let's go for more cadence. And this way you will find the moment where the cadence is not coupled with the power. Then you are finding this number. And this number usually is in the higher range of the options that this athlete has to sustain a good cadence. So I mean, if this athlete is going to decouple when is, for example, in 95 revolutions per minute, then this is the best moment to decide that maybe we need to go in 80, 81, 82 revolutions per minute during the full training or during the full competition. So the first part is to do this kind of test that is very easy to replicate, because even you can repeat it every single week. It depends, for example, on the fatigue that you have. If you are very, very tired, okay, I want to see you the last hour during the Ironman, 180 kilometers, 112 miles, how are you feeling? And if you are able to sustain the cadence at this moment, because then you will be very tired. And at the same time, we need to save energy to run the full marathon. So it's not just, I feel fresh, I have this cadence. Okay, this is a good information, but let's test this cadence in a different situation. And this is very nice with Tridot 2 because, you know, when we are doing, for example, a session with high intensity intervals, for example, zone 2, zone 4, zone 5, at the end, the last part of the session, you have zone 2. So you have there a good opportunity after, for example, 3 hours in your bike ride to test specifically with fatigue coming from the 3 hours and coming from the zone 4 and zone 5, which is your best technique? Which is your best cadence? So now with the fatigue, we will mimic the conditions of the race that you will have maybe in 1, 2, 3 weeks.
Yeah, very interesting to just kind of the mindset of just testing that cadence. Because with heart rate, what we know from the podcast, heart rate does not lie. Heart rate will let you know when your body is working harder than it needs to be working. And so you start slowly raising that cadence and you find out at what point does my heart rate start climbing at the same wattage. Yeah, that's a very, very interesting test just to see how your body responds. You know, there's some people I think in the cycling world that, you know, we call them kind of pedal mashers. You know, they like to just kind of go at a slow grind and they kind of have powerful legs and they can do that. I can't do that. My legs wear out very quickly if I try to go at a low cadence. I like spinning at a higher cadence, but you know, and so everybody can find out for you, how does your body respond to different cadences? So great experiment there, Jose, to kind of play in our zone two training with that. Coach Jeff, is there anything additional here that you kind of talk to your athletes about when you're having that conversation about bike cadence?
Yeah, first of all, I'll say that higher cadences feel easier because there's less muscle activation, but it taxes the cardiovascular system more and it can elicit dead spots in the stroke. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, lower cadences, they could be more economical because it taxes that cardiovascular system less, but it can tax the musculature more, right? So there's no perfect cadence for anyone. It's all about being efficient and having a smooth pedal stroke. And you want to train the full range, but then kind of do what Jose was saying. You can kind of play that game and find what your sweet spot is for you. But the big thing, like you could push 200 watts all day long in an Ironman. That's what you're supposed to push. But if you're pushing it at a 60 cadence or you're pushing it at a 100 cadence, right? There could be, you know, a big difference there on how you feel and how you run off, right? Also, you want to keep fluidity in the ankle, and you want to think square. Thinking square can help, right? Forward, down, back, up. You might mash down 250 watts, but you might be pulling up the back after the stroke at 80 watts, and so the average is a lot lower, right? So
interesting.
I'll say this and kind of end here, but like on the bike, we're trying to accomplish three main things, right? We want to improve our physiological fitness through our aerobic capacities, VO2 max, our anaerobic lactate thresholds, and to improve upon our efficiency and economy. It's kind of like your fuel economy in a car, right? And this is the energy expenditure to produce sub-max power or pace and speed inside of that, but be able to hold higher percentages of your max for longer durations. And that's where cadence comes in, kind of that third piece or that third spectrum. And we want to be efficient when we do that. Wherever you fall in that range on the bike, right? I like to switch to higher cadences the last few miles of long course, right? It's you spin out a little bit, you're flushing out lactic acid or tight hips or whatever, but more importantly, I like to match what is soon to be probably the higher run cadence that is about to happen in T2, right? And long course cycling, as people get tired, their hip flexors, their glutes, everything's getting tight, and their cadences tend to fall a little bit towards the end, right? And if your cadences are too low, and then you get off the bike and you hold a higher run cadence, right, it can just skyrocket that heart rate. And so
your body's going to freak out. Yeah, your body's going to be like, what are we doing?
And actually, there's two sayings in long course, right? And early into the run, right? Whatever your heart rate is at mile two or three of the run, let's say, it probably won't be lower than that again without slowing down or walking.
Yeah.
The other saying is, once you slow down or walk, you never get that original pace back again, and at least maintain it until the end. So I like to keep my bike and run cadences within a 5 to 10 RPM kind of a window, right? And then as you get towards the end of the bike, you kind of match what is soon to be that run cadence, and that can really help those legs off the bike.
There's a lot of times in TriDot where certain workouts will prompt us to use different cadences throughout the workout. So on things like spin-ups or things like high cadence pedaling and our warm-ups, we intentionally are spinning our legs at a exaggeratedly high cadence. And then there's sometimes in our harder intervals where sometimes TriDot will have us intentionally doing exaggeratedly low cadences. Workouts like Power Builder, for example, it might have us holding 60 or 70. What is TriDot trying to do to us when it's prompting us to spin with a much higher or a much lower cadence? Coach Jose.
I like to remember here one training that I see from Sebastian Kienle. You know, Sebastian Kienle is one of the biggest cyclists all over the world.
Fantastic. Yeah, he's had a great career.
Yeah. So one of the key sessions that he had before Ironman Hawaii was a four-hour session with two blocks of 45 minutes separated by 30 minutes in zone two. The 45 minutes, the two blocks of 45 minutes were pedaling at the race pace, at the race power, okay? But with the cadence higher than he will expect to do in Kona. This way, he was trying to mimic the same power during the race, during Kona, but at the same time, increasing the cardiovascular load. Because as Jeff said, it's very important to understand that when we go up with the cadence, this is something that we are doing with TriDot. Some of the training, as you said, Andrew, are explaining us, okay, you must go over 100, for example. So the reason to do that is because TriDot wants to increase our cardiovascular load. This is very important. When we go to the other side, when we go and we pedal 60 revolutions per minute, then is when we are increasing our strength, muscles, joints, ligaments, tendons. So this is the other side of the spectrum. But both of those training sessions are very good to improve the coordination. All the muscle fibers are coordinating much better. when you are increasing or decreasing your regular cadence. So for this reason, when you are aiming your specific cadence, then you are going to do a more efficient effort. And this is key. As we said before, efficiency is everything when we are talking about endurance sport. So when we do high cadence or low cadence, it's from the cardiovascular system load or from the muscular or strength training load. So this is very important. It's not like a joke. This is key. And as I said before, even the professional triathletes, the best professional triathletes in the world, are using those methods because they are very, very important to really improve the performance of every single triathlete.
Yeah, I would even say low cadence is actually fast twitch muscle fiber type, because it's recruiting more power per stroke and using that anaerobic glycogen as a fuel source, right? It's more anaerobic, but believe it or not, you usually hold lower heart rates at slightly lower cadences in riding. High cadence is slow twitch because it's an easier gear and less motor unit recruitment, but higher in the cardiovascular demand, right? So Jose alluded to Lucy Charles having an 80 stroke rate plus in her swim. And then I said most upper age groupers could maybe stay in that 50 to 60 range, right? Well, I would say that low cadence for triathletes is usually anything about 75 RPMs or lower. That's really low cadence. You know, really high cadence would be anything kind of 90, 100 plus. You might have watched the Tour de France that recently happened. Good job, Mr. Jonas.
Sure did.
Jonas
Vingegaard.
Oh, it was great. It was great. They hold really, really, really high cadences, but they're not running off of the bike, right? They also have a much greater cardiovascular engine than we do, right? So I would say for triathletes, tend to arguably fall for long course in that kind of 80 to 85 RPM or maybe 80 to 90 RPM range. Pro cyclists, though, not usually triathletes specifically, usually hold much higher than that, 90 to 120 cadence, right? So we just kind of want to know that point at which we're not overly taxing our cardiovascular system, but we're not overly becoming too anaerobic with a glycogen burn. And we want to find that sweet spot and be able to hold that for long durations and maintain it, but keep an efficient pedal stroke in doing so.
We will transition to the third sport here, running. And Coach Jeff, I'm gonna release you first because you are very passionate about talking run cadence. I know that's kind of a specialty of yours. So let's talk about optimal run cadence. I mean, here at TriDot, we go where the data tells us to go. So Jeff, what do we know about the optimal range for run cadence?
You know, I like safe ranges. You know, where you fall in those ranges, it depends. Are you short? Are you 5K-er, or are you a triathlete that runs a 5K off the bike? Those are two completely different things, right? And then are you a marathon? Are you Ironman? Are you ultra? And all those things. But where you fall in those ranges, it depends. But I use the 160 to 180 cadence range. I think most people, read or see or say, hey, 180 cadence. Oh, if you go on a 10-mile long run and your average cadence wasn't around 180, you got to fix something. There's something up. We got to get that cadence exactly 180, right? You know, and so I would disagree with that, right? And I would agree and say that, yes, shorter strides and higher cadences are good, right? That especially in long course triathlon and running off the bike, because it's safe, right? It's efficient, shorter stride, higher cadence. But there is a point, right, where you can start to manipulate that, right? And I would argue that we talked about swimming. There is a point in your swim career where increasing your stroke rate could make you faster, right? Higher cadences feel easier, right, on the bike. But for running, we don't increase our steps per minute to speed up. It's a misconception, okay? Our cadence in running should not change much as our speed changes. And I would say that's more that zone 2 through 4. Zone 2 is kind of that aerobic threshold. Zone 4 is that anaerobic threshold. Zone 5 and 6 are a little bit different. Zone 5 is hill repeats. It's more muscular, physical, external response kind of oriented. And then zone six is sprinting, right? And so that's kind of the outlier. But I would say that zone two to zone four pace, your cadence should not change much as your speed changes, right? And so what you manipulate is your stride length. So people will think, okay, I'm jogging at an easy zone two. I'm just trotting here, very slow, calm, cool, and collected. My cadence is 160. Uh-oh, I got a zone four, a tri-dot, 3x8 minute, zone four, let's go. I got an 8 minute surge, here we go. Now, as you accelerate, your cadence will increase. But I would say that if you're going from a zone two, let's just say a 160 cadence, the idea might be, all right, now I'm at zone four running, is my cadence gonna be closer to 180? Right, I got to take more steps. I got to speed my legs up to speed up my speed and pace, right? Wrong. I would argue that your cadence should stay about the same, and I use that kind of same 5 to 8 window. So your cadence shouldn't change much as your speed changes within that zone 2, 3, and 4. What you're manipulating is your stride length. So some people think, okay, well, if shorter stride, higher cadence is the goal, right? So maybe I should be at the upper end of that. I hear or read 180. But if the higher end of that spectrum is good, is great, you know, better. Is 185, is 190 better? So too high of a cadence could start to, that's where vertical oscillation comes in. So if you have a really, really, really high cadence, let's say 190 steps per minute, you could have too great of a vertical oscillation, and you don't.
Yeah, you're probably wasting energy in some way, almost like on the swim, right? If you're just flailing your arms on the swim because you think faster arms is faster swimming, you're probably wasting energy if your cadence is too high on the run. It sounds like
exactly. So if your vertical oscillation is too high, I first look at your cadence. Is your cadence exaggeratedly high? It's not low cadence running, but maybe you go from a 180 cadence, you know, to a 178. That's still the very high end of the spectrum, right? And so now your stride length comes into effect. Most people are 0.9 to maybe 1.0, 0.9 to maybe 1.1 meters per stride is kind of a number you'll see, let's say in Garmin or something like that. You go run a certain distance run, you come home, hey, here's my average pace, here's, you know, the distance I've traveled. Oh, my average cadence was 180, right? My vertical oscillation might be really high, and then my stride length might only be 0.9 meters. So things that I do with my athletes is you can manipulate that. You know, and if your vertical oscillation is too high, maybe we could slightly lower your cadence and try to get that 0.9 meter average stride length up to 1.0, 1.1. So you're taking about the same amount of steps or even less, but you're traveling further per step. You're not any fitter. You're just manipulating your stride length versus cadence. And you could run 10 seconds faster per mile, and it has nothing to do with fitness.
Yeah, no, very, very interesting. And Jeff, I know with your athletes that you look at that data very individually, session to session, and you're really working with your athletes on their form and kind of the ways you just outlined. But Jose, for you, as you're kind of looking at the run data of your athletes and you're having these conversations about their form and what you're seeing in the numbers, what are you looking for your athletes to have it? And what in our cadence or maybe our stride length, what in the data kind of triggers you to, oh, we need to take a harder look at your run form?
It was very nice. Like some weeks ago, we went, you know, to Ironman Victoria with some of my triathletes. And the day after the Ironman, we met Guruche Frades. Guruche Frades was the winner of the race. She ran 2 hours, 53 minutes, and she is one of the best professional runners in the sport. So she is very nice. Wow. And we met with my wife. My wife was qualified for Kona for this year. So they were very, very excited. We started talking to Guruche, and she's an open mind. She's very friendly. So we started talking about, okay, how do you train your running to be as good as you are? And this is beautiful, and you will love it because it fits perfectly with trials. First, she just trains 3 times per week the running. 3 times. She's a professional triathlete running 2 hours and 53 minutes.
Second, and that's it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Second, she always trains the running after the bike. So when she is tired. So if we see the schedule usually planned for triathlon. We have the Wednesday running after the Tuesday bike with some kind of repetition. Sure do. And Sunday is the same. You have Sunday, your running session after your bike session on Saturday and your transition. So you are tired. So fits perfectly with the same idea that Tridol is bringing. So I think it's brilliant.
Absolutely.
So when I explain to my athletes this concept, it's exactly the same. So I want to see you, especially when we are getting closer and closer to the race, I want to see you running with this form, a good technique, but at the same cadence that we will sustain during the last part of the Ironman. Because when you see the decreasing, when you see how the speed is decreasing during the 42 kilometers, 26.2 miles, is many times because the athlete is reducing both the cadence and at the same time the length, as Jeff said before. So first, we analyze this. Which is your cadence when you are racing fresh? Okay, you are racing. You are running fresh. So this is your cadence. Now let's analyze this on Wednesday and on Sunday when you are tired. Then this is the perfect combination to know, okay, we have different numbers. Okay, so we will go for the lower cadence, or maybe the cadence that you have when you are doing the running after the bike. So this is more similar to the race conditions. So this number is our first number, but always we are trying to increase, as Jeff said, not just the strides per minute. Length is very, very, very important, because if you increase your power every single step, you are increasing the length of the of this stride. So this is as important as the number of repetitions that you are doing. So if you are increasing, imagine just 5 centimeters every length, at the end of 1 minute, at the end of 1 kilometer, this is a huge difference. So we always focus first on the technique, second after the technique, when we are running and the intensity that we are running. As Jeff said, the difference between the low intensities and the high intensities is not that much. It's just 2, 3, 4 strides per minute. And then when we analyze this, we try to mimic this when he is or she is tired.
Yeah, very interesting to think through, you know, what numbers are you seeing in a fresher session versus a more fatigued session. And yes, Tridot definitely has you fatigued from the day before for a reason, sometimes on those running days. And I'm absolutely aware that early on in a race, whether it's a sprint and I'm going hard or Ironman and I'm going a little easier, but absolutely miles 1, 2, 3 early on, the first 25% maybe of the run split, I'm very focused on my form. I'm very focused on my numbers. I'm very focused on holding a certain pace. And then as you fatigue and as you wear down and as you're starting to see spots, as you get closer and closer to the finish line, suddenly it can be easy to let those things slip away, right? And you kind of enter this survival mode where it's, okay, I'm not focused on my form. I'm not focused on any particular numbers. I'm just hanging on for dear life. And how can our athletes at home, what can we do in our training? What can we do in our form, swim, bike, and run, to really work on whether it's our strength or our technique? What can we do in training to help us hold better cadences and better technique longer into a race? And I'll start, Jeff Rains, with you, and then we'll go to Jose to close us out. Jeff Rains, what do you think?
You know, our goals are to have as least amount of ground contact time as possible, vertical oscillation as low as possible, right? Your ground, the more time you spend on the ground equals more movement, right? And the more movement you have, it can lead to deviations or injuries, right? And so what we need to focus on in our day-to-day is knee drive, right? Our glutes and hip flexors, right? Those are the first things to go in runners and triathletes when we're late into the race or we start to fatigue, right? The more successful runner, especially in triathlon long course off the bike, is the runner that can maintain the distance per stride or that knee drive for the longest into the race. All right. BJ talks about it all the time, right? It's the sagittal plane, right? And so we, okay, I lost my spot. Oh yeah.
You're good.
So we as runners and triathletes, we don't get out of that sagittal plane enough in our training, right? We can neglect that side to side and we get really tight. Especially coming off of a long bike ride on race day, we have a tight hips, glutes, hip flexors before we even start the run. Right, the first things to go in triathletes is that knee drive, and what happens is it's by human nature. We subconsciously start to reach out the lower leg to try to grab more distance to compensate, right? And then we start to maybe overly heel strike, or we're not landing perfectly under our center of mass, so we lose the knee drive, we lose distance per stride, our cadence starts to fall, we start to overreach the lower leg, we put the brakes on, right? And then we start to have lower cadences, then we decrease that stride length, and then we slow down, and we never get the original pace back again. So what we want to do is we want to be able to maintain that stride length, that distance per stride for longer, as long as we can into that race. And so doing run drills day-to-day, strength training, I can't stress this enough, mobility before stability, right? We want to wake up the range of motion. We want to get out of the sagittal plane, stretch, yoga, all those things. And then over time, we kind of build stability and strength around that, right? And then longevity, that's where muscular endurance comes in, right? So we want to be able to maintain that knee drive long enough to maintain the speed and cadence to get to the finish line, right, without positive splitting, slowing down that second half. I think that's kind of the bigger goal.
First of all, I think the answer from Jeff is absolutely brilliant. I think I agree 100%. It's beautiful to listen to all this knowledge, all this information. I think it's great. And first, I agree. And second, I think, again, try to this giving us every single session for a reason. So when we are running after the sets, zone four, zone five, we are running with certain kind of fatigue. So this is the best moment to focus on your technique, because this is the best moment to mimic the conditions of the race. Once you are running, for example, 1 hour and 30 minutes, 1 hour and 45 minutes, and you have been doing some kind of repetitions before, then the rest of the session will be in zone two. Zone two is quite similar to your race pace. So then is when you need to be absolutely focused on your technique. Repeat your numbers. Try to mimic the same numbers that you have in the during the beginning of the session, at the end of the session. Keep this cadence, keep this length. So this is the most important part, the critical part, the last part of every session. Especially when we are approaching to race day, is when we have the longest sessions. We have the longest session after the Tuesday session, the bike session. So we have the opportunity to do that. And we have, most of the times, the zone three repetitions at the end of this session. So this is very important. So sustain your technique, your cadence, your length, strength, everything. At the end of the session, it doesn't matter if you are running zone three, zone four. So it's not just the time. It's not just the training zone. It's not just the heart rate. It's everything about technique. Remembering again the conversation with Guruce Frades, we asked her, okay, Guruce, which is the, how is possible that you are running the first mile the same pace than the last mile and with the same cadence? And she answered, okay, this is because I arrived to a point where I'm running this pace and it's like I'm walking. This is easy for me. Okay, I'm in an Ironman, it's tough, at the end I'm fatigued, but for me it's natural. It's neuromuscular memory. It's everything about repeating, 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 and again, with fatigue. So this is key to understand that it's not just to cover the minutes, to cover the intensities, heart rate, pace. That's very good. That's very important, but we need to focus on the technique. So we have 1 hour to improve our fitness level, but we have 1 hour every single session to improve our technique, our feelings, our motion. So this is something that I repeat every single day to my triathletes.
Just because you nailed your 3x8 minutes of zone 4 inside of that hour run, right? And just because you nailed that and got 100 TrainX score in TriDot, I would argue that you could still fail the workout because of exactly what Jose said, and I think it's brilliant. If your balance of time, your last 30 minutes, you've already done your 3x8 minutes or whatever, and your balance of time, your last 30 minutes, your cadence fell significantly. Your stride length diminished. Your vertical oscillation was way high. Your form broke down the second half. You got 100 TrainX score, but you may have failed the workout.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
It's Coach Cooldown Tip Time, and I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. Our TriDot coach on the show today is the type of human who instantly makes you feel amazing when in his presence. And I'm talking about Coach Kurt Madden. He is truly an inspiration who lives his life with peacefulness and inspiration every single step that he takes. This is probably why he had a successful 40-year professional career as an educator within the coaching community, as a teacher, an assistant principal, a principal, and as the CEO of 5 different nonprofits in the charter school system. In the endurance sport world, he has earned every single one of his accolades, ranging from second place overall in the Leadville 100-mile trail run all the way to winning the Ultraman World Championship not once, but twice, all with large doses of modesty, grace, and gratitude. He began coaching triathlon in the 80s and is now a full-time TriDot coach. Kurt has been married to his wife, whom he fondly refers to as Queen Kay, for 44 years, and together they have 2 sons, Kip and Kai. It is truly an honor to have you on the Cool Down, Kurt.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. It is great to be at the Cool Down, one of the favorite parts of any workout.
Oh, yes, you've got that right. That's funny. So I have here a nickname that I think no one would actually believe it once belonged to you. So the nickname is Butterball. Where did this come from? And how long did this last in your lifetime?
Wow, Vanessa, you're bringing out everything. I guess we're family. Yeah. You know, the story goes something like this. I was a very chunky little baby. And I was told that for probably the first 4 or 5 years of my life that I had some very large thighs. And I don't think it was a lot of muscle mass. I think it was just flat out adipose. And the more I developed, they're going, I think we could just call him Butterball. And then I don't know what happened. I guess in my teenage years, I went from a Butterball to kind of a mad dog. And that's a really, that transformation, I think it was inner city. I was playing sports all the time. I knew that for me to survive as an athlete,
yeah,
I had to be a little bit different to show them that I had a little bit of swag. And if I hadn't done that, I'm not sure what happened. So today, I don't think I've gone back to the Butterball yet. I might have. So we'll see what happens.
That's awesome. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And speaking of sharing, you have a plethora of amazing tips because you've been coaching your entire life. So I would love for you to share one of your tips that has helped yourself and also your athletes to build wild success.
Okay. So as I've kind of reached into my toolkit on coaching tips, I think this one is something that I've learned. I think that there's a lot of transfer, and it's really looking at your main set and trying to say, how can I get a bigger return on investment? So I want all of our listeners to think about all of your races, from an Olympic to a 70.3 to a full. And the real question means, when you, at any level, when does a race kind of actually start? And what I found is that in the swim, using Olympic distance, the race kind of starts really at about 1,000 yards. I go up to a 70.3. The race really starts at about 1,500 yards. Then I go to a full, probably right around 3,000 yards. So what that means is that's later in the swim. Aha. So why don't we adjust our training a little bit to kind of take it easy in the beginning part of the workout, even though the main set might be initially, move some things around to say you want to be at your peak performance in all of your swim sessions from, say, 40 minutes to about an hour. And doing that again and again, those repetitions day after day, week after week, you build up to that A race. All of a sudden, that muscle memory goes right there. So that is for the swim. Now, on the bike, very similar. You look at the Olympic, same thing. When does the race start? Probably at about mile 15. When you go to the 70.3, it's probably at about mile 40. For the full, it's at mile 70. You never, never, never want to get to those points on those race distances to say, you know what? I've already burned all my matches. I've got nothing left. And oh, wait a minute. There's something called the run after that. So by pushing out that main set, not to go into it in the first 10 or 15 minutes on the bike when you've done your spin-ups, but push that out. Probably the best way I could explain it, if you have a 3-hour and 30-minute bike ride, you would stay in a zone 2 all the way up to about 2 hours. Then do the main set. It might take an hour and then cool down. This is why. When you race, you want to feel at that point on the bike that, okay, I'm warmed up now. I'm mentally hanging in there. I've done this many, many times. Again, your legs, your muscle memory is going to be fantastic. I find that people that jump right into that main set on the bike in the first 20 minutes, two things happen. They push way too hard. The second thing that happens, they can't get their heart rates back down. And then thirdly, often they kind of give up. They kind of give up and they don't quite finish with good form versus stay in zone two, get after that main set, cool down. Now we're gonna go ahead and take off on the run. So that's what I find on the bike. And then the run is identical. Biggest mistake people will admit to you is I started way too fast on the run. Break it up into small chunks. I find for the Olympic, get to the 5K like I still know my name. And I know that I'm still the same person because I want to finish strong in the second half. When I look at the 70.3, athletes tell me again and again, I was fine until mile 8. The last 5, the wheels came off. In the full Ironman, mile 16 typically is that time when you can have your biggest gains or your biggest losses. So when you're training, look at a 2-hour run, look at an 1-hour and 30-minute run, push that 15-minute main set all the way to the end. I've seen it myself. I drink the Kool-Aid. You do that week after week, all of a sudden in the race, you get there and it's like, oh my goodness, this is just like training. Mm-hmm. My legs know exactly what to do. So I think by pushing that main set out, it really makes a huge difference. And it teaches an athlete patience. And I think in our sports, even at the Olympic distance, patience is really key versus I'm kind of impulsive. If I'm a guy and a girl goes by me, I'm going to start to chase her because I don't want a girl to go by me on the bike. No, sit back a little bit. So hopefully those tips were helpful to our listeners today.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.